Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today's interview is with Madison Cunningham. But before we get to that, I've got a few interviews I'd like to tell you about. The next three I'll be posting are with Grian Chatton from Fontaines, D.C., and I love this band. Then after that, we've got Gavin Rossdale from Bush. They have new album outs. And then Tomah Mars from Phoenix. Those are the next three I'll be posting. So a little bit of variety there across the spectrum. Or maybe not, depending on what you listen to. But those are the next three I'll be posting, so stay tuned for those. But back to Cunningham. She is a two-time Grammy Award nominee. She was nominated in 2019 for her album Who Are You, and that was nominated in the Best Americana category. And then this year, her EP Wednesday was nominated for Best Folk Album. What I liked about this conversation, I mean, if you listen to this podcast at all, you know about how important I think the ritual is to the writing process. And, you know, every question I asked her, it wasn't a formulaic response at all. It wasn't a sense of, oh, I've, you know, a kind of a cookie cutter response to my questions. But every question I asked her, what I loved about this was that she knows exactly what her process is like. And there's absolutely a ritual. She gets up and she writes. Here is something. She gets up and she writes. First thing she does is she writes for 10 minutes a day. 10 minutes, I should say, 10 minutes in the morning. It's not a lot. You can do it. But she writes for 10 minutes every morning. And when I was a professor, I always told my students that, you know, your writing process is always taking place. Whether you're eating, sleeping, drinking, walking, talking, writing, whatever, your writing process is always taking place. And, you know, she said kind of the same thing. She said, writing happens subconsciously. And so you've always got to be thinking about that. And the importance of the regimen, and I believe this, is that the regimen allows you to write badly. And what she told me is that when you have a regimen, it's okay to let up on yourself. If today is not a good day, if you don't write something great today, you know that tomorrow you'll be doing it again. And so the regimen, you know, doing it every day without fail, allows you, I think, to not have a fear of failure and to know it's okay to write badly. And I believe that you've got to just do this every day. I mean, so many songwriters tell me creativity or songwriting is like a muscle. You have to do it every day. I've heard that analogy many times recently. But she definitely has a very specific ritual, and it shows. And that ritual does include, and I've heard, geez, it came up again with Cunningham, washing dishes. And I've got a great pull quote, and this is direct. Every time I put down a guitar and picked up a dish, I've never regretted it. And I don't know what it is about washing dishes, but I hear that a lot. It's inspirational. And last, you know, I've always said there's a through line between songwriters who write great lyrics and songwriters who read. And Cunningham is a voracious reader. She said she goes through phases of obsession with certain authors. And I think her latest obsession is Mary Oliver. And books are one of her favorite wells of inspiration to draw from. But Mary Oliver is one of those writers. Sylvia Plath. I don't think I've ever heard Sylvia Plath before. And I've never heard Flannery O'Connor. I mean, it's crazy to think about that, right? No one's ever mentioned Flannery O'Connor, but what a great source of inspiration for songwriters. And David Eggers and Kurt Vonnegut. I hear Vonnegut all the time. So I loved this conversation. Like I said, I loved hearing just the very the specificity of the process to Cunningham's songwriting. So with that, here is my interview with Madison Cunningham. Are you an everyday type of writer? I mean, some songwriters feel like they just need to create every day. Others more just kind of like, yeah, when the mood strikes them. So where do you fall in that continuum?
I am naturally probably not an everyday writer, but it's a learned skill because Because by the time I would kind of get into a songwriting cycle, I would find myself really, really scared and nervous about the process because I wasn't giving myself over to it entirely and letting there be some, you know, bad days or I should say non-productive days in the process. And I think when you do something repetitively and every day as sort of a regimen, it's like you start to let up on yourself a little bit and go, it's okay that today I didn't come away with a full song or I didn't write, you know, my favorite thing, because tomorrow I know I'm going to be doing it again and I know I'll find it, you know? So for me, I really, really, really try to keep it in my diet, whether I'm in a writing cycle or not, just to write something. And it doesn't have to be a musical something. Like it more means just getting words onto a page for the sake of expressing myself and keeping my, I suppose like what happens, you know, in my head sort of on paper. Cause that sometimes that sort of distance between what's in your head and what comes out of your mouth is a long one. And it takes a while to figure out how to, you know, how to articulate things. But the more that you do it, it's plain and simple, the better you get.
I think it's interesting because I read a lot of interviews with, you know, prose writers about the writing process. And, you know, prose writers will always say, butt in the seat every day. I don't care if it's words, number of words, mm-hmm. or like, no, you know, no novelist is going to say, or poet is going to say, yeah, just write when you feel like it. It's funny that they always say every day, no matter how bad it is.
Yeah.
But most songwriters, it's funny how that's different with songwriters that I, for whatever reason, I don't hear that as often. I hear more of the when the muse strikes kind of thing. I don't know why that is. And that's more just a comment as to why that songwriters seem to be unique in that element of, yeah, don't do it every day. Do it when the mood strikes.
Well, I think my theory behind that is songs are, you know, they can live in sort of this medium of like, they could be 2 minutes long. They could be 10 minutes long, 4 minutes long. There's room to breathe there. And sometimes it's easy to finish like a well-rounded out song, like in a day, sometimes. But for like, you know, novelists, it's like they're writing chapters,
yeah,
and chapters. And some of those are going to be completely thrown away. It's like, there is no option but to sit your butt down and just continuously write. I would imagine, you know, not being a novelist myself, I would imagine that the sort of like differences between the two are great. But you know, for me, it's, I take that approach out of weakness, meaning like it is to face my own fears and to keep myself in a healthy rhythm, because I know otherwise I'll probably just never write, because
yeah,
I'll always find a reason to not.
Right. Right. I know it's, I always wake up feeling like today's the day I'm going to do it, you know,
yeah,
I'm going to write, and it never happens that way, but well, it does happen that sometimes, but
yeah,
when I was a professor, I always told my students that you got to understand that the writing process is always taking place. If you see the writing process is only when you're putting pen to paper, then you're going to be full of anxiety, but your writing process is taking place when you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you're running, yeah, when you're walking, when you're biking, whatever. Those ideas are forming in there somewhere. And I think that that can kind of lessen the anxiety if you know that, yeah, the writing process is always taking place, even though it's not really just pen to paper all the time, right?
I think that's so well said. And that was definitely a lesson that I learned a little bit later, which would consider myself to still be learning. But, you know, like my friend kind of gave me the advice, like I just went through a phase when writing my first record where I was just so anxious and panicked about getting it right. And I just wanted it to be incredible and the best songs that I had ever heard, you know, all the pressures that you put on yourself. And he was like, honestly, I think in this case right now, the fact that you are writing for hours every day is your biggest barrier. I think you need to like go to the movies or like take a load off, because I can feel your imagination like shriveling out because you're so in your head. It doesn't matter that you've sat in your same chair for 8 hours today and you will tomorrow. It's like nothing is happening. And remember that like writing happens subconsciously. It is your subconscious, actually. It's what's buried deep inside. So when I started getting that advice, I started getting more regulated, meaning like I would write intensely for like an hour, focus, I should say, intensely for an hour, and then give myself a half hour off to do whatever I wanted or to clean or whatever. And then I would go back and do that for like 4 hours a day. And that's like, that gave me a healthy cycle where I was actually letting some of the songs or the ideas finish themselves. I was giving that space. I was, you know, cause your mind is like, it's smart. It's going to put those pieces together. It's going to give you what you need. But if you're like constantly just strangling it out, there's no way it's going to happen.
So I was going to ask this later, but since you mentioned cleaning, I'll bring it up now. So I've had so many songwriters tell me that they get song ideas during mundane activities. So I have heard very specifically, I think it was Yola told me vacuuming. So I've heard vacuuming, I've heard cleaning, chopping vegetables that, you know, they happen during those mundane activities. In other words, when you're not trying to think about it. And I, you know, there's various theories, but whether it's some repetitive activity, like I think it's some, I've heard gardening also, well, it's not necessarily something random, but it's some activity that has repetition to it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever had that happen? Maybe when, you know, and I mean, with the vacuuming, it's funny because Emily Scott Robinson told me the same thing also, where it's actually the sound. There was something about the sound. So I'm curious, has that ever happened to you during some, and it could be like, could be walking, anything where those song ideas happen.
I mean, washing dishes is a big one for me. Because I, you know, it's like, it's the same task with each dish. You're like, how do I get it to be the cleanest that it can be without a dishwasher? So I'm just laser focused, but also like my little treat for myself, because I hate washing dishes, or I think I do. And then I'm like, okay, just do it, Madison, just do it. And then I put my headphones on and I'll listen to a podcast or listen to music, and I'll just let myself get in the rhythm of dishwashing. And I love that feeling of suddenly just getting lost. Like you're just kind of hypnotized by the task at hand. And there's been times where I've, you know, not put headphones on and just started singing a melody. I can't really recall if that melody landed anywhere or became something, but it was like my mind was freed up from the like clutter and the chatter for a second that happens all the time. And I don't know. I felt maybe it was the like, what it feels like to be inspired. It's like, you have to feel a little bit free. You have to feel a little like out of body, or not like, not so tied to yourself. Otherwise you're just like, you're immediately like trapped.
Yeah. Well, with, you know, prose writers or poets, I mean, you know, they're never going to say when you're in a rut, stare at the screen. It's always,
no,
go do something else. And so it's kind of the same thing with songwriting, is that I imagine that when you're not thinking about the song ideas come when you're not thinking about them.
It's also funny that sometimes it takes a long time to actually sit in that chair. And then when you've devoted 8 hours of your day, there's this thing in me, maybe it's pride, I don't know. I have a really hard time leaving. Like I have a really hard time listening to the voice that says you can walk away and come back. Cause there's something about me that's like, no, I'm not giving up. And I like think I have the power in that moment to like force the song if I just outweigh it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, every time I've put down a guitar and picked up a dish, I've never regretted it.
You know, it's like I said, it's, and I don't know, it's because people were, you know, inside for so long, you know, it's easy to write songs when you have experiences to write about. When you're out and you're in public and you're at a bar or a restaurant or among people and you think, oh, that's a good line. I need to use that. But when you're not around people, you know, not to make this a pandemic related question, but I early on when I was talking to songwriters, this is like, you know, April 2020, you know, I remember interviewing Lily Hyatt and Patterson Hood of the Drive-By Truckers at the same time. We did it together and they both said, yeah, like, I'm out of ideas. I mean, when you're in your house and you're around people,
you know, there's only so much you can write about.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to hear, maybe they do, but I personally wasn't interested in writing a song about, washing dishes. And like, you know, it's like those, I do think that the thoughts or lines, like you were saying, that will happen are just a result of walking around or, you know, observing people or, and like when all of that, when actually I got another place that I get ideas in is airplanes. When I'm flying, and I'm sitting at the window seat and looking out the window, it's just this crazy, like, I just suddenly just want to write. And, there was none of that, you know, travel is completely cut off. It's just like all of my sources of the way that I was intaking the world and viewing it was all just like severed immediately. And, it was literally the worst time for writing. And that is when my label looked to me and they said, all right, now write your second record. And I was like, yeah, also the record that is, you know, the most impossible record to write. Right. It's your sophomore record. So good luck.
And yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so hard. It really was. And it's not anyone's fault. Those were the cards that were dealt. And like, you know, I had to get serious.
Yeah. So when it comes to writing then, I mean, I think to me, I have a ritual. One of my rituals is I write in this chair, but I revise in that chair behind me. Well, part of it is I think you've got to separate the revision process from the creative process. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the closer those two things are, the less distance you have, the harder it is to see things.
Yeah.
You know, that's why with distance, when I write something and I come back the next day, I see things I never saw the day before. So
yeah,
it's a confidence thing, but I definitely have rituals, time of day, place, things I have to have with me. So I'm curious, is there any kind of ritual to your process, whether it's, like I said, time of day, place, maybe quirky mm-hmm. things you have to have with you, stuff like that?
I suppose that's, yeah, I do. Because if I'm not near an open window, and it's not the morning time, I feel like I'm kind of like, what's the point? So yeah, that's kind of my routine. I get up, I'd like to make a cup of coffee and sit near my window, which has like a beautiful view of like, downtown and these rolling hills. And so I'll just sit there, write for probably 10 minutes. And then I'm up and I'm done with that portion. And then I'll move to my office where I'm sitting now. And that this is where I play my guitar and like actually write songs.
So let me get this through. You wake up and then you write for, you said 10 minutes. So is that almost, mm-hmm. is it a timed thing?
It's a timed thing. Yeah. It's just, I just set a timer.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's helpful for me because it's like 10 minutes of uninterrupted time. I'm not thinking about anything else, or I'm doing my best to not think about anything else. I'm just focusing on the page and just honestly, I don't get too specific. I just let things stream out, even if they don't make sense. It's also, you know, at this point, probably 8 a.m. So nothing I will have said will have made sense. So it doesn't matter anyway. And so I'll just sit there, drink my coffee. And then, you know, maybe my husband will walk out and we'll talk for a little bit. That's usually what happens. He gets up later than me and we talk for like an hour. And then we both like go our separate ways. He stays in the living room and I come here and I start writing.
So it's fascinating. So where did you get the 10 minutes thing?
There's a book that my friend gave me when I was close to graduating high school called, How to Write Better Lyrics by Pat Pattinson, who's a Berkeley professor. Are you aware?
No, but that's interesting. Yeah.
I assumed that this is something that everybody knows about. So when I talk about it, I'm like,
no one's ever mentioned that actually.
It's crazy. But it's all based on your senses. So he talks about, you know, using all five senses and then the next two senses that no one ever talks about, which is your organic senses. You're using like sort of like your body to express how you feel about something, like saying, oh man, this put a knot in my stomach or whatever, or your kinesthetic sense, which is the way that your body views the world. And the example that he uses is like, you're sitting on a train and the train next to you is moving and you're not, but you feel like you're moving.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, when you're drunk, the room is like spinning, that kind of stuff. So, so basically it's these seven senses that you, you are, accessing in that, in those 10 minutes. And you have to, the rule, the one rule is you have to stop when the timer goes off, just so that your mind is getting trained to go deeper each time. Cause it's, it understands the time limit, you know? And he posts an object online every day. So you, you write on that little object.
Oh, so this, so it doesn't necessarily have to do with songwriting, then it can be any topic.
No. Yeah. But for okay. me, for me, it does have to do with yeah. songwriting.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Meaning like I will follow that practice, but that has bled into many songs of mine, even though it's like, maybe just like this random jumbled story. There'll be a line or two that I'll pull from it and put into songs.
So do you journal? Is this like a journal or is this separate from journaling? I mean, do you journal also or no?
I journal also, but this is separate. Yeah. This is more just like an exercise to really like learn how to use imagery and, you know, just express sort of like how you view the world. And it's really just to like sharpen your writing ability.
Yeah. I've never heard that, but that's, I love that idea. I mean, I, like I said, I'm just, and I'm big on that routine.
Yes.
Just, and it does sharpen you. It's like any other exercise.
And 10 minutes is so doable. That's why I can't run from it. I'm like, yeah, that's completely, I can fit that in anywhere, you know?
Yeah. When you journal, do you get song ideas ever from journaling?
I haven't before. When I journal, I kind of let myself be very factual because I journal a lot when I'm touring because I want to remember, you know, what those days were like. And so, you know, sometimes I'll let myself be a little bit more like, imagery based or whatever, but for the most part, it's very much like we did this today and I ate this and, you know, just trying to remember little details about what I would consider to be like very precious memories.
Yeah. So the other thing I'm interested in, because songwriters tell me, all of you tell me about these, the endless voice memos on the phone.
Oh yeah.
And I'm fascinated by, well, I guess fascinated is not the right word. I'm more distressed by the lack of organization that they typically tell me, hundreds of voice memos, no organization, and they've got to go back and look. And I think, can't you just put a title on it or maybe a date? Doesn't it make you anxious that you've got to go back and find that and search? So is there any organizational principle to those on your phone?
Sometimes, yeah. For a couple songs where I know what the title is, I'll be like, oh, hospital. Here's version one of hospital, version two. And this is where it gets a little bit, you know, I added a bridge here, hospital bridge. I do my best to title things, but sometimes it's like, I'll have a random melody idea and then I'll just be like, it stresses me out to think of a name for this. So it's just going to remain untitled. So it's like, yeah, I'm challenged in my organizational skills. I find a way to go back. It's weird. It's like, it's this organized chaos that only I can understand. And I always find it again.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what I hear often is listen, if it is really that good, you'll find it. So the big question is when you write lyrics, are you a pen and paper person or a computer person?
Honestly, I'm a computer person. And that is shocking to me because I used to, my favorite thing was collecting journals and it just felt so romantic. And, you know, you get that little ink stain on your pinky or whatever. And it just, yeah, it just felt so cool. And I never looked back at my journals and I never took the time to thumb through them. And so I was like, I need a better way to actively edit things as well. So I've stuck to the computer and I'm actually organized on my computer for songwriting ideas, which is you know, there's no turning back now.
Are you a relatively linear songwriter? You know, do those songs tend to happen in order, or is there kind of stuff all around and then you kind of pull things off from all other, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I think as I've written more, I've understood that there is a bit of a process that kind of stays the same, which is it always starts with a musical idea and a melodic idea. And that's my baseline. That's my springboard. And then I know where I want the melody to go and the arrangement's starting to form. And then the lyrics, I just let myself sort of just kind of vomit lyrics. And I just write them all out, even if they make no sense, and then sort through them like in the days to come and go like, ah, that's not as good as, it's just like this, it's the equivalent of pouring out like a huge puzzle and not understanding like where the pieces go, but bit by bit, you're like, oh, that goes there, that goes there. And yeah, usually, I mean, lately I've been like writing songs that will have like full arrangements and I know what I want the song to do, but there's like a couple lyrics that just will not sort themselves out. And it's like so endlessly frustrating because I want to play that song.
So with those lyrics, do you set them aside? Because I do talk to songwriters who are pulling lyrics that maybe they wrote 4 or 5 years ago that they wrote them, but they never had a home.
Yeah.
Then eventually they find a home. So is that what it's like for you?
I repurpose lyrics all the time. There'll be songs that will, you know, have gotten to a place that wasn't quite finished. And so I'll go in and I'll take those hand-me-downs and that's worked a handful of times. And that's why I keep a log of everything. And if I'm in a particular lyric rut, I'll go back and look at other songs that I know I didn't finish and take from there if it makes sense.
You mentioned Drunk earlier, and I don't understand this, but I've had some songwriters tell me that being hungover is a great place to write from. And I don't get it at all. But there's something they say when I'm hungover, that's a great time to write.
Well, man, I envy those people because it sounds like they figured out the exact, you know, the exact place and where ideas come. I feel like I'm constantly like, I don't really know where or how or why or what emotion makes these things come. I just know that I have to like keep my open sign on, you know, and that's kind of it. At least that's the only thing that's made sense. It's not like, oh, I know that if I drink, you know, 3 whiskeys and a beer, I'm good.
Right.
It's not like, and some people are like that, which is so fat. This is why the conversation around songwriting is never ending. It's everyone has their different angles, you know, their different superstitions around it. And it's so cool. But yeah, I wish I could write hungover. I can't do anything hungover, which is why I really don't like being hungover.
Yeah. There's something about when they articulate it, it's something about being in their head. Like, well, some people say it's being regretful. It's being kind of looking back on being wistful or looking back, but there's something about all you can focus on is your head. And so I don't get it either, but I guess that, you know, the whole point of this conversation, to me, at least to any of these, is I do think it's important to know what your ritual is and to know what works, because you have to know that if you're in that space, oh, I should be writing then. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because songwriters, you know, songs are considered to be a little more, the muse is associated with it. But for me, at least, I think if you're any kind of creative person, whether you're a painter, anything like that, I just think it helps to know, oh, when I have that thing with me, you know, or this is the time of day. And I mean, I've interviewed songwriters who've been around for 40 plus years, and those who've been around forever aren't saying, yeah, I write when I feel like it. Those are the ones that say, you gotta make it, you gotta have that discipline.
I think that's what I picked up on early enough, you know, to see like, oh, this is like, this is a learned skill, and this is not just a skill. It's a practice. And I think maybe for a long time, I thought it was just a skill. Like it was just something that you had or you didn't. Mm-hmm. And all my favorite writers are actively not giving themselves that excuse. It's like, no, everything that we build and we're proud of is hard earned. And when I usually go through a fearful stage where I let myself kind of flirt with the idea of actually writing, but I don't, because I'm really, really scared of it. I'm scared that I'm not going to understand it anymore or be able to access it or make something good. There's usually like, I always go to my friend. I'm always like, what do you do in phases like this? And he's like, just let it happen. And you'll eventually get there. You'll eventually get to a place where then you're completely devoted to the good and the bad of the songwriting process. And you're no longer afraid. You're just devoted. You're just there for either outcome, knowing that you will find it. And his advice has helped me so much. And his process is like, from what I understand, he writes in the morning and he writes at night. He's always just open. And he's always just like keeping his finger on the pulse in that way. That has been being able to watch him and be near him and have him sort of like pour over some of my songs. It taught me everything that I needed to know about like being available. Seems like that's the thing that works.
And you can't be afraid to write really bad stuff.
Yes. And I am constantly so afraid of that, but you know, I think finishing bad work is also important. It's the principle, right? And it's like, and I think what I was trying to say earlier too, is it's like, sometimes I'll look at other artists and be like, oh, it just came easy for them. How lucky. And it's just not true. Anyone you talk to, it's like, that is the scapegoat that we allow ourselves to believe when we don't want to put in the hard work.
Well, I think we always imagine everyone else writing more efficiently than we do.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I mean, I always imagine everyone else writing 20 pages in like 5 hours, but totally. You know, and it doesn't help to have that thought. But everyone thinks that. Everyone thinks, oh, everyone is more efficient than me. Everyone's faster. Oh, it's must be so easy for them. And yes, for every songwriter that says, or, you know, this came out in 10 minutes, this song came out, that's one song out of the 100 that they wrote. And the others, I agree with you. I think you can't be afraid. And there's a great essay that I used to have my students read by Anne Lamott, the author, Lamott. And the essay is called Shitty First Drafts. And it's in one of her books. And her whole thing is, you got to write a shitty first draft. You cannot be afraid. And it doesn't matter what it is, really. It can be a song. It can be, you know, but you cannot be afraid. You just got to write that shitty first draft.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's funny that sort of idea of not being afraid, the letting myself be afraid for a little while has been almost that idea it accomplishes the same thing in terms of like, once I finally admit that I'm afraid and I let myself be for a minute, then I hear how stupid it sounds. I'm like, oh, I'm prideful. Actually, this is what this is. Like, I am completely afraid of making a mistake. And it's like, but like, what mistakes can really be made in the creative process? It's not, I don't view it as, I don't know that they can necessarily be made. I think it's just going. It's just letting your subconscious run. And then you get to the editor gets to decide later if it's good or if it's bad or if it needs improvement. And, you know, I don't know. I guess that's why it's so helpful to also be in a community of songwriters or just writers to talk through like those hesitations and why they exist and why, you know, there's no need to be afraid.
But even being aware of those things, like as we've said, that's all still a part of the process. Like you are aware of that. And that's about, you know, I think that awareness is all a part of making you a better writer. Exactly. So speaking of editing, then, are you an aggressive reviser to your lyrics?
I'm in the middle between passive and aggressive. I land somewhere right in the center. I can be really hard on myself about certain things that, sometimes it'll just take someone in my camp being like, I feel like you're overthinking that, for me to be like, okay, maybe I am, move on. And then other things just feel right to me, you know, from the get, and I'll just let it go. Even if someone is, I can't really explain it. There's just certain lines that mean something to me immediately. And if someone says, ah, that could be better, I usually jump at anyone's advice and I'll be like, okay, yeah, this should be better. I'll go back in and I'll revise. But certain lines, I'll just be like, nah, it is what it is. It's right. You know, I guess I just, my gut knows when to, when to defend something and when to go back in and try again.
Do you think are you more likely to defend those lines that came out quickly? You know, those ones, those songs, those lyrics that just happened effortlessly. Are you more likely to defend those because they came from a spot of just spontaneity, I guess?
I guess that might be true, because I'm not afraid of ambiguity. And if some of those sort of like lyrics are a little bit ambiguous, or like maybe the black sheep to the song, I love that. I love there being sort of like a curveball or something, or something that I am also on the outside of a little bit. I think it's really important to be just as lost in the story, you know, as the listener is, being the author of it, you know, or the narrator of it. It's like, it's really important to remain sort of lost by, you know, or mystified by certain lyrics, because you have to keep the wonder, you know? So there's so much of me re-editing things to be understood so that I can understand them, the world can understand them. But there's some things that I'm like, ah, I like the mystery in that. And maybe it was born out of spontaneity. And maybe that's why it's mysterious. I don't know. I don't know why, but some things just like, don't feel like they need to be touched, even if they don't make immediate sense. 'Cause that's happened for me. I'll write songs and we'll love them because the feeling is true in some way, but not all of it is articulated to me, myself. And sometimes, you know, with age and time, I'll be like, oh, I get what that means.
Yeah.
And that's cool. It's like leaving little Easter eggs for yourself.
Right. I like that. Is there, on the new album, is there a song that, what was the most difficult song? I don't mean to write because maybe from the emotional point of view, but one where just the whole writing process, maybe you felt like giving up on it. But that you're glad you finished. Was there a song that stands out as being the most challenging?
Yes. This song called In From Japan was a song that I had given up on probably like five different times. And it just kept coming back. There was just something about it that was like, from the melody to the words, to it just all was starting to mean something more to me. And that's when a song goes from being this sort of like, what are we doing here? Is this ever going to get finished? To like, now I'm going to finish it, because this, something has turned on for me where, or some lyric will make me believe in it again, or, you know what I mean? It's this, but that was the song that sat around for a long time, just in pieces. And I could never figure out how to make it a cohesive thought. And then I think maybe the thing that helped me finish it was, I was like, maybe it doesn't have to be a cohesive thought. Maybe it has all these, you know, maybe it has a big arc to it. And it's this sort of, you know, rolling landscape that is changing with each section. And so I kept it. And that's one of my favorite songs to play. And it's made so much sense to me in hindsight, because it was like my subconscious knew all of these things. It knew that I was like, it knew how to express what I'm in my head could not express.
So it wasn't that you gave up on it. It was that, oh, this will come eventually. I think there's a difference, right? I mean, you felt like, oh, this will happen eventually. I just have to give it time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I had given up on it a couple times, and then I had landed on the conclusion of like, there's something real here. And I don't know that I'm able to see over it or through it, but I'm going to finish it and just let myself come to that conclusion later.
Yeah. All right. Last question. So I see the bookshelf behind you. So I do find that songwriters, for the most part, are pretty voracious readers. Mm-hmm. I think there's a pretty, to me at least, there's a generally clear through line between good lyrics and, you know, mm-hmm. and reading. So how much reading do you get to do? Genres, favorite authors, mm-hmm. And how much does that influence you as a songwriter?
I mean, books are one of my favorite sort of wells to draw from, because it's this, you know, like you could read something in a book and it would be such an obscure thing for someone to automatically connect it to. I'm not saying stealing, but I'm saying like, yeah. It's an easier way to, sometimes an easier thing to be inspired by. My big obsession recently, I'll go through phases of being obsessed with like one author. My recent obsession has been with Mary Oliver.
Nice.
Everything that she's written, I will order and have, and just like, I love all of it. It's all incredible. I've just finished her book called Devotions, which I think is a collection of a bunch of poems. And then I really loved, I think it's called The Bell Jar. Yeah. The Bell
Sylvia
Jar.
Sylvia Plath.
Yeah.
Sylvia Plath. So what, listen, I'm all for the classics, but I don't honestly don't hear the classics mentioned very often. So, so what drew you to that book?
It was recommended first. Everyone was talking about Sylvia just as an important writer. And so I was like, I'm just going to dive in. And I just thought that the book was like, it was really devastating because it's leading up to her eventual suicide.
Yeah. But
it's like, it's almost like this foreshadowing of it. It's like, she's almost telling everybody in the story that that's going to happen. So that was like, you know, dark and fascinating to me. And her writing is just like, ethereal and beautiful. So she means a lot to me. I went through a Flannery O'Connor phase too. A good man is hard to find.
Yeah.
I think that's the beginning of a series of a bunch of short stories. And then another book that I loved that I read recently was, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. Have you read that by David Eggers?
Eggers. Yes.
I loved that book. And then probably finally, like Vonnegut is another one that I.
Vonnegut comes up all. So there are like four. Vonnegut comes up all the time as songwriters. Raymond Carver, you know, short story writer, Bukowski and Cormac McCarthy.
Wow.
Well, I mean, listen, they're all, you know, there's the economy of language. You know, they're not, you know, the economy of language, but it's all so powerful. So those four often come. I have heard Mary Oliver quite often, too.
Yeah.
But Vonnegut comes up all the time. But some of those, you know, I think because of the images and those writers, right?
Yeah, the images are incredible. I mean, God, Vonnegut has in so many chapters, I've like, it's so rare that I will laugh out loud while reading, but those are his books and his stories for me. And yeah, I think also his self, like a portrait of the way he views himself mm-hmm. is so ironic and funny that's sort of like, I guess filter over like songwriting is fascinating to me. Like to like view, you know, yourself like that through that lens, the ironic lens is really funny. And so I kind of dabble with that sometimes. Cause I just think it's also, I don't know. It's a funny way to be humble.
Well, the first time I read Slaughterhouse-Five, I think I got a fair amount of the way through it before I thought to myself, am I supposed to laugh at this? Cause there's some really funny lines, but it's such a dark,
so dark.
Know, it's so dark. And then there was some, I forgot what it was. There was some image and I read it. Okay. Maybe I'm supposed to laugh because I didn't think I was supposed to. I thought it's so dark that this shouldn't be stuff I'm laughing at.
Totally.
I
mean,
and when once I realized I could laugh at it, it changed how I read his writing. When you can laugh and be just like overwhelmed by the power and the darkness of it too.
Yes.
But that's why he's such a good writer.
Yeah. That's the most powerful combination to me. It's one that I don't think I possess naturally, but it's, you know, to people who can like make humor out of really, really, and it's not making fun of darkness. It's actually just bringing the humanity out of it.
Yeah, totally.
That's what we're all looking to do.
And it changed how I read it. You know, once I realized, oh, I'm allowed to do this. It was really strange. I remember the moment, the exact part of the book, but it opened me up to be a different type of reader.
Yes.
You know, because when I realized I could do both of those things.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And like, I feel like there should be a place for that in songwriting too. There should be a place to grieve, to cry, to laugh like that. That should be, you know, our goal as songwriters, and to always be, sacrificing the technical side of things for sincerity, and always trying to sort of hack away at the weeds to get to the heart. And I think that requires us like shedding all of our tricks and our gimmicks, because that's really easy to, I don't know, to lean on and to like prioritize.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.